Most of us have the experience of voting in an election, but few of us will ever know what it's like to be on the ballot. This hour, the candidate's perspective. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, we'll talk with two of Iowa's former congressmen to find out what Election Day is like from a candidate's perspective. Democrat Dave Nagel and Republican Jim Ross Lightfoot will join us. Before that, we check in with several Iowans who are out east, helping with the recovery effort in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. That's all coming up this hour, right after the news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On this Election Day 2012, a little later in the hour, we'll talk with two of Iowa's former congressmen to find out what Election Day is like from a candidate's perspective. We'll be talking with Democrat Dave Nagel and Republican Jim Ross Lightfoot, that in the second half hour. Before that, Hurricane Sandy, as it is affecting us in Iowa in this way. Hurricane Sandy, the largest Atlantic hurricane on record, as well as the second costliest Atlantic hurricane. It's only surpassed by Hurricane Katrina, which we remember well, striking the Gulf Coast in 2005. In early calculations, Sandy is estimated to have caused a damage of at least $20 billion, affecting 24 states at least, Florida to Maine, west to Michigan, even Wisconsin, particularly severe damage as we've been hearing in New York and New Jersey. Its storm surge hit New York City last Monday, October 29th, flooding streets, tunnels, subway lines, cutting power in and around the city. This first half hour, we want to talk with a few Iowans who are out east at this time, helping with disaster recovery. Let's go to Tony Spencer, joining us by phone. He's a volunteer with the Red Cross from Lake Panorama, Iowa, currently in New Jersey, I believe. Tony, hi.
Yes, hi.
So tell us what you're doing there with the American Red Cross.
Right now, we're in a feeding station. I'm in mass care, and we're working with the Southern Baptist Kitchen, and they're making the food, and we're delivering it to shelters and to people.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been out there, Tony?
We were deployed on Wednesday. We got to the site on Thursday of last week.
So you are making food and delivering it?
We're not making the food. The Southern Baptists have a kitchen that's very, very organized. They make the food. We put it, and they put it in our Camrose. And we load the Camrose onto our IRVs, emergency response vehicles, and then we take it out to the clients, the public, to need it.
Okay,
Go ahead.
What part of New Jersey are you in?
We're in a town called Ware Town, which is down near Atlantic City.
Okay, so when you go out, what kind of stories are you hearing? Who are you meeting?
One of the areas is down the coast from Atlantic City, just a little bit north, and it's a fairly affluent area, but we've got water that's upwards of 5 feet there. There are boats into the houses.
Still today.
This was yesterday that they were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So are
I assume they're still there today.
Are there people going back to see what's become of their homes?
They are. Some have gone back. We were in a town last night called Brick, New Jersey. People were just getting back into their homes. Last night, they decided they were going to evacuate the city again because of the northeaster that's coming in tomorrow. So those folks that we saw last night and gave food to are now preparing to abandon until after the storm.
Mm. What are you hearing from the people? What stands out as a remark or two that you're hearing?
Yeah, generally, they're just happy that we're there. Most of the people are working together like they always do in a disaster. The biggest problem right now for some people is just having enough gas to get from where they are to the next place. If they're working, for example, the gas lines here are very, very long. Mm-hmm. We've seen lines upward of a mile to a mile and a half long waiting to get gas. And so that's a big concern for a lot of people. They've got, if they have no electricity, then they're using other means to heat their houses or whatever. And so they've actually got gas cans standing out beside stations trying to get gas.
Electricity on in some places?
I think the majority of the electricity is back on. We've seen electrical trucks from Canada, from California, from Texas, from everywhere. There are lots of those out here helping to get things back in order. So I think that most of that's getting back on now. But the incoming storm, I think, is going to hinder that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Tony Spencer, you're a volunteer with American Red Cross. Have you been involved in other disaster areas prior to this?
Last year we were in Mississippi for the tornadoes, and we were in Minot, North Dakota for the flood.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
How does this compare?
It's more widespread. You know, this is a large area that's been hit here, all the way up the Atlantic coast, or in New Jersey and up into New York. That's the hardest hit area. So it's a wider spread area.
Mm-hmm. Disaster often brings out the best in people. Is that what you've seen?
Oh,
you've experienced?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Not only with the Red Cross people that are here doing what they can to help out, but with the people in general. You know, they're all, you know, helping each other, and they've got nothing but good things to say to you when they meet you, and it's really kind of an uplifting experience.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think you'll be there, Tony? You have any idea?
Our minimum deployment is 2 weeks, so I assume it'll be that at least, and depending on what happens tomorrow or tomorrow night with the storm, it could extend longer probably.
Okay, Tony Spencer, volunteer with the American Red Cross from Lake Panorama, now currently serving, volunteering in New Jersey. Thank you for your service, Tony. We appreciate your reflections on what's going on. Good luck, stay safe, and stay dry.
Okay, thank you much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We're checking in with a few people who are out east from Iowa, helping out with the disaster relief in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. Let's check in now with Nick Jost. He is a regional response director for the American Red Cross of Eastern Iowa. And Nick Jost, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Thank you for joining us. Where are you right now?
Right now, I'm in Queens, New York, at a kitchen, one of the kitchens we have set up there.
Mm-hmm. So what are the tasks you're doing?
I'm assisting with the IRV coordinator at that kitchen. There's obviously been quite a few emergency response vehicles out there, and we're just trying to get everything settled. So I'm like Tony, I'm with the emergency response people as well. So mm-hmm. My primary duties are feeding people as well.
When that emergency response vehicle goes out, what type of emergencies are you finding?
In the communities that we have here?
Sure.
Well, a lot of the damage is, roads are torn up, power's still not on in a few places, and people just need a little bit of a break from cleaning and working, and so we're just providing them food and some supplies to help them help their day be a little bit more normal.
Mm-hmm. So this ERV, emergency response vehicle, is delivering food. So it's not like here when we have an emergency vehicle, some incident happened, and then you race out to help.
Correct. Yeah, we load the IRV up with food or bulk supplies such as blankets, which we have been delivering, or cleanup kits, shovels, rakes, that sort of thing. We basically use it as a delivery vehicle. That we can also feed hot meals out of.
So, anyone you've talked to out there, a victim of this storm, that a memory of something they said or something else that sticks with you?
Well, one of the communities that we went to was an elderly community, and some of these people aren't physically able to get out and go shopping or things like that. And when we pulled up there and we dropped off boxed lunches, They were just so appreciative because, they were very hard hit like many other areas, but they didn't have the physical ability to help themselves out as much as other people could. So
mm-hmm.
When we were able to pull up to that location, you could see in those people's eyes how much they really appreciated what we did. And, I was really grateful that we were able to help them out.
Do you get a chance, or do people ask where you're from?
Oh, yes. Yep. Our emergency response vehicles have their home chapter right on the side, so everybody can tell, where you're from, what kind of part of the country you're from as well.
So I imagine there are a lot of grateful people who will remember Iowa in a different way now out there.
Yes, yeah. A lot of people see we're from Iowa. They know of the floods that have occurred there. I've ran into quite a few volunteers as well who were in Cedar Rapids or in Iowa for the floods of 2008. So it's really an experience that pulls everyone together,
right,
within the Red Cross community as well.
Sort of a payback time in a good sense of that word.
Yes, that's what I see it as.
What have been the biggest challenges for you as a regional response director for the American Red Cross of Eastern Iowa there?
Well, one of the biggest challenges for me has been the amount of people that we have had to deploy, the amount of volunteers. Over 5,000 Red Cross volunteers have been deployed to the East Coast, and that's a huge number. And I deployed myself quite early on, and it's been a challenge to continue to get people out to help because there's such a need. We've been working very hard to talk to all of our volunteers to see if they're able to go for a couple weeks, and that's been a challenge to keep on people because the requests for volunteers have kept coming into the chapters.
You have the ears of thousands of Iowans and border states here in the Midwest right now. Is there anything you want to ask for?
Well, in the Red Cross, we are a volunteer-led organization, so we always try and recruit volunteers. If you're looking for an experience like this to help people, you can go online to redcross.org and get some information. And the Red Cross is also 100% donor-based, so
okay. We
don't get any government funding. So all this response that we're doing is from the donor dollar. So you can go online to www.redcross.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to donate. You can also text the word Red Cross to 90999 for a $10 donation.
Nick Jost, thank you. How long do you have an idea how long you'll be out there yet?
I think I'll be out here for probably another week or so.
Nick Jost, thank you very much for your service with the American Red Cross and for that update.
All right, thank you.
And let's check in now. Checking in with Iowans who are helping out in the aftermath of the hurricane Sandy. This is Jamie Casterton is with us now, team leader with the FEMA Corps unit based in Vinton, Iowa. Jamie, are you there?
I am. I'm here.
Great to have you with us. We want to make sure people know that the FEMA Corps is, as I understand it, a branch of the AmeriCorps dedicated specifically to disaster relief and recovery. So you've been trained or perhaps experienced other disasters.
Yes, I have. AmeriCorps, NCCC, and FEMA have teamed up in this new opportunity, and AmeriCorps, NCCC has been involved with FEMA in other disasters in the years past, so now it's a great collaboration to work together specifically on disasters.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been out there?
We've been out here since Friday, my team has. We've been working in a disaster recovery center in Brick, New Jersey, in Ocean County.
Mm-hmm. What have you been helping the people out with?
We've been talking with survivors and getting them registered with FEMA so they can receive possible FEMA assistance and other assistance available, like voluntary agency assistance. And we've just been answering any questions that they have, connecting them to community resources, and just being an ear for them to share their stories.
So, yeah, you've heard a lot of stories. Share a few of the stories with us.
Well, actually, my teammates are the ones that are really on the ground listening to the survivors and what they've gone through with this storm. But there's a lot of people that don't have homes as a result of the disaster, and so they're worrying, especially with this nor'easter that's coming through, what they're going to do for a shelter. They're worried about not having electricity and heat to keep themselves warm, and just worrying about what their lives are going to be like after this disaster for them.
Mm-hmm. What are they going to do with this coming storm?
Well, some people will be able to stay with family and friends to be safe. There's also many shelters in the area that can keep people safe and warm during the storm. So they just have to, tucker down and use those community resources. There's plenty of community resources here that are available to them. The outpouring of support from their community is really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just all working together with the help of volunteers that have come into the state to keep safe.
What feeling do you have, Jamie Casterton, as working with FEMA Corps, working in this disaster area? What goes through your head? What do you feel in your heart?
I think that all the people in our program in AmeriCorps and NCCC, FEMA Corps, we are so dedicated to service, and it really just makes us proud to be able to be involved in this kind of an organization and to be here helping these people that need us. And the hugs and the thank yous that we get, it just makes our heart fill with joy that we can be here.
Mm-hmm. Any unexpected things that you've come across?
I mean, you really are never prepared for the kind of stories that people tell you. And so it's taken a little bit to get used to that and still be able to do the job while you're feeling for these people so much. So that's been, we've been working on that, you know, how to stay healthy and safe while we're doing this work and be able to be at our best in order to help these survivors.
Do you think this experience has changed you, Jamie?
I do. I think every service experience is, it, you know, changes you for the better. And seeing the people of New Jersey and how they've pulled together through the storm, it just gives me more of a sense of community and makes me sure that I'm going to be able to pull together in my communities that I'm involved in as well.
Give us an idea of what it looks like where you're at. You said Brick, New Jersey, right?
Yes, we're in Brick, New Jersey. I actually haven't been able to take my team out to view any damage because we've been solely working in the Disaster Recovery Center, and we're working long hours. Hopefully one time this week we'll be able to go out and see. But based on the stories that my team has been hearing, it sounds like there's a lot of devastation, so it's a good thing that we're there.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, with this type of experience with you or other words you're working with, does this point you in the direction that, of a career you might be interested in, disaster relief?
You know, for a lot of people, it does. When I was a Corps member in AmeriCorps NCCC in 2010, and I really fell in love with serving in times of disaster and in service in general. So for me, that's what I would like to do as a career, is just keep on being involved in service, specifically with disaster, because it's just such an amazing way to make your service count, to really help people in need.
Well, Jamie Casterton, thank you very much for your service with FEMER Corps, a unit based in Vinton. You're now in New Jersey helping out. Stay safe, and we're sure glad you're helping out people out there.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Jamie Casterton joining us live from New Jersey as we check in with a number of Iowans who are out east helping in the aftermath of Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, on this Election Day 2012. Before we have to take a break, we want to get a different perspective. Utility crews from across the country have converged on the disaster area. As we've been hearing in the news, they are racing to restore power to businesses, to residents, some of whom have been sitting in the dark without electricity for a week. Crews are cleaning, replacing, and fixing equipment needed to get the lights back on for millions of customers who lost power when this superstorm Sandy blew through. Joining us now for a few minutes, Tina Potthoff is with us, Media Relations Manager for Mid-American Energy. Tina, are you there? Hi, Tina.
Hi, I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, great. Loud and clear now. We wanted to talk with one of the people out there from Mid-American Energy, but of course they're very, very busy, so we're glad that you could join us to give us a sense of what Mid-American is doing right now. How many of Mid-American's employees from our area are out east helping right now?
Mid-American Energy has 29 employees and more than 250 contract line workers and tree crew members to provide assistance to the utility companies in the East. The call for help was completely voluntary, so we had many employees that gladly came forward and said, hey, I want to go and help out.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a problem when people said, when you said you're released from the contract workers or your own employees, it wasn't a matter of having to urge people to go. They lined up.
That's correct. Our employees were and always have been very generous to assist other utilities that are in need. This is something that other utilities would do for us, and so we're happy to help, especially with the hurricane that went through. And now the nor'easter that we're keeping a very close eye on, that also could have an impact on utilities in that area.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about the work that these people are doing. You said line workers. What actually has to be done physically to restore power?
Sure. Well, specifically from our group, we have about 24 linemen that have been sent to assist. We have two supervisors, a safety employee, and also a mechanic and a line design technician. Some of the work that they're doing includes putting up poles, restringing wires, and really cutting down trees and branches that may have fallen on power lines. There's a lot of debris that came through the area, and simple cleanup just to even get to some of these facilities is so important right now. We've been working for a company called Central Hudson Gas and Electric. We've since wrapped up our work with them. We work with them for about 1 week in the Poughkeepsie, New York, and Albany, New York areas. And now we're working for a company called New York State Gas and Electric. We are under a mutual assistance agreement, if you will, and so we participate in something called Midwest Mutual Assistance Calls, and they actually put a call out to various utilities letting people know where the help is needed. So we were a little north of New York City, about 2 hours north of New York City, and primarily assisting with the cleanup and just restoring electricity to those people that are impacted.
Mm-hmm. Is this something that your workers or the contract workers have been used to doing, or is this a one-off experience?
No, we're very used to providing assistance to other utilities. This is a little unusual in just that the damage is so widespread along the eastern seaboard. As a matter of fact, when before this even started, there was a call for at least 20,000 utility workers. Before the hurricane had hit, the utility companies up there had about 3,000 linemen secured, and so there was a call for an additional 17,000 line workers across the company. They've since reached that. Actually, they've surpassed that number when it comes to utility workers. And I think when it comes to restoring power, it provides a sense of normalcy to those people that have been impacted by this. So they're gradually working through the number of outages. But as of right now, the main bulk outages have been restored. And right now they're looking at smaller pockets of customers that they can get back on in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm. This is a common practice, it seems, for utilities to help out when they're needed in such situations to transfer, get assistance to different parts of the country. So some of these, have we used assistance from utility workers in the past for our floods and disasters?
We sure have, especially when it comes to some of the snow that we see here in Iowa. We had an ice storm several years ago where additional assistance was necessary. We, too, have also provided assistance when it's come to hurricanes, Hurricane Irene just last year, and there was also a winter storm that needed assistance in South Dakota. So this is fairly normal and usual in the utility business to provide assistance like this. There were some utilities that actually trucked their vehicles and put them on a semi and sent them out to the east, and then they flew their utility workers to the East Coast. In our case, they were still about a two-day drive away, so we sent our utility trucks up with the workers. It was about a day and a half, two-day drive up to the New York area, and we're hoping that they'll come back this weekend. But as I said before, with this nor'easter coming through, they may stay a little longer because we're going to see what type of damage this storm does mm-hmm. to that area.
Just about a minute left. A couple quick questions. The salt water, is that a particular problem in restoring the electricity?
It is. It is. Salt water can definitely have and do greater damage on utilities, poles, things like that, wires. And so a lot of equipment is having to be replaced. Broken equipment, we're having to restring wires, put up new poles. A lot of poles are down in that area. And like I said before, cutting trees and branches, some of the areas are just littered with branches, and it's taking a while to actually get to a location before they can restore power.
And very quickly, what preparations are going on to prepare for this nor'easter coming? Again.
As of right now, we're continuing to do work on the restoration for Hurricane Sandy, and we're just going to watch the weather forecast very closely and see if additional help is needed. But it'll be the same thing, restraining wires, putting up poles. With those high winds coming through the area, a lot of damage can be done. So we're hoping that it doesn't impact as much as they say it's going to do.
Tina Potthoff, Media Relations Manager for MidAmerican Energy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment on River to River, after a short break, we'll talk with two of Iowa's former congressmen to find out what Election Day is like from a candidate's perspective. Democrat Dave Nagel and Republican Jim Ross Lightfoot will be with us after a short break. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So good to have you with us on this Election Day 2012. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and I want to remind you that this evening, NPR's coverage of the election returns will begin at 7 p.m. Iowa Public Radio reporters from all around the state will be joining in with that coverage as our results become known this evening. So you can stay with us. Iowa Public Radio giving you the latest results beginning at 7 p.m. PM, and we'll go as long as needed, is what we think. It could be one that is for the history books. We don't know. Tomorrow on River to River, of course, Politics Wednesday, and we'll have a different perspective on it tomorrow once it's all over with, 10 months after the Iowa caucuses, roughly $1 billion of spending later in this campaign. Hard to believe it will be over, and we'll know, hopefully, results tomorrow. Well, on this election day 2012, most of us have experienced voting in an election. Perhaps you have to go out to vote yet today. Those polls are open until 9 o'clock in Iowa. And if you haven't registered, no worries. Bring proof of identification, and you can register at the same time you vote today at your precinct. But few of us will ever know what it's like to be on the ballot, have your name on a ballot, have people vote for you. This half hour, we want to find out that perspective, the candidate's perspective. We're joined by two of Iowa's former congressmen to do that. Jim Ross Lightfoot is with us, former Republican U.S. congressman, served from 1985 to 1997. Jim Ross Lightfoot, welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, I guess.
Yes, it is afternoon. Good afternoon to you. Dave Nagel.
Yes, it is.
Good afternoon to Dave Nagel as well, former Democratic U.S. Congressman from 1987 to 93, the years of his service. He represented at Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. Like, way back when we had 6 seats, we're now down to 4. Dave Nagel, welcome.
Yeah, yes, Jim. Hello, how are you?
good to hear you, bud.
We hear more of each other now than we did when we were in office.
Now, Jim and Dave, I imagine an election day and a campaign, it must bring back all kinds of memories for each of you of your own personal experiences. I wonder if we could have you at the outset here share with us an election day memory that stands out for you. Jim, do you have one that comes to mind?
Well, you know, every election, I think Dave will agree with me on this, the 2014 election begins at midnight tonight. So everyone attending the business is probably already tuned into that. I've had several fond memories. One thing that I used to do every election year that was more of a tradition than anything, my dad would come into town in Shenandoah, and we went to the old George J. Drug Company where they still had a soda fountain. In fact, they still have one there today. And we would share a chocolate malt apiece, and he would go back to the farm, and I would usually go back to wherever it was that we were staying, depending on you know, which election cycle we were in, and find things to do to fill out the day, because when you get to 12:30 on election day, if you haven't got it done, it isn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. So you might as well just go relax somewhere and wait for the results. But like anything, you know, there's nerves. You hear little reports of this and that and the other coming in. You say, oh, my goodness, we need to check this out. We need to check that out. I know one year there was what they call push polling was done at one election, and they were calling up and saying, if, you know, do you support Lightfoot or blah, blah, and they said, blah, blah. They said, thank you. We hope you go vote. If they said Lightfoot, they said, well, we'd like to ask you a question. If would you be more or less likely to vote for Lightfoot if you knew he was going to be arrested for child molestation after the election? And that was one of the nice ones, actually.
Go ahead, Jim.
That stuff's going on, Dave, and I'm sure he's going to probably cover his own stories. And both sides, unfortunately, do that sort of thing. This particular election, I think there's so much going on that the pundits are having a lot of trouble with it, because I think there are a lot of unknown factors, as I don't view this as a typical presidential election, and we can get into that if you want to later.
Okay, yeah, let's reflect on this election in just a moment, but first, I'm sure Dave Nagel has a memory for us, a fond memory or otherwise.
Well, I wish I would have. Listen to you before, because I went out and worked my tail off on election day, and I think the reason I did was because I didn't want to stand around because I was too nervous to sit down.
is it so, Dave Nagel? Is it so that you get so revved up over the months and weeks of campaigning, it's hard to put it in a lower gear all of a sudden? Probably.
Well, it is. I remember the year I lost. I got up in '92 and I lost, and I got out of bed at. Oh, gosh, I think I got out of bed at something like 4 o'clock in the morning. I was going to go do a plant gate the next day. The election was already over. I mean, you're just on automatic pilot. But I always tried to do plant gate in the morning, then I tried to vote, and then I tried to do a couple of towns that I thought maybe they'd let me on the radio, and, you know, small-town radio stations, maybe they'd let me on, and I tried to target key areas. But then, and then you do just what Jim said. You go home and you wherever we're staying at a hotel, you go down to the hotel and you sit there and you wait like everybody else. But I think Jim would agree with me on this too, that if you've been in this business for a while, you should pretty well know whether you're gonna have a good day or a bad day. You can almost feel it after a couple of elections. You can tell whether it's there or not. So the result isn't as surprising.
Mm-hmm. So when we see these from both sides, not just a presidential election, but also our congressional candidates here in Iowa, these last projections of confidence in the days and weeks, we don't know what's really going on in that mind. You think that most of the candidates have an idea if they were, you know, to share with their closest loved ones what's going to happen, Jim Ross Lightfoot?
Yeah, I agree with Dave. If you've done your work correctly and the pieces are starting to fall into place, you've got, I would say, a pretty good gut sense of where it's going to go, mm-hmm. Whether, you know, it's going to go bad or going to go good or maybe up in the air and not know for a little while. But I think probably one of the unpredictables that would be in a race today, one of the things that Dave and I didn't have to contend with, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but all the social media. There's so much more out there going on today than there was when we were going, both running. I mean, there were telephone banks and people banging on doors. But beyond that, there wasn't a whole lot. Now you've got all the social media going. You've got all the cable news, particularly on the national races. And I don't know if they are as sure as we might have been in our day when you got to Election Day that you're either going to win or lose.
Let me remind our listeners, if you've just joined us, Jim Ross Lightfoot with us, Dave Nagel, two of Iowa's former congressmen, U.S. congressmen, joining us to reflect on their campaigns on this election day and sort of compare things. Let's let you do that, Dave Nagel. The social media is certainly something that's changed since the 80s and 90s when you two were in office. You have a sense of how that changes the candidate's experience, Dave Nagel?
Well, you're always on guard. I mean, you have to assume that the microphone is always open wherever you are. I remember one time I was trying to get to the fifth parade of a day. This was during the campaign, and the pilot I don't fly a plane, but the pilot lit on a closed runway down at Williamsburg, and man, I was on the front page of the paper the next morning for landing in a plane that landed on a closed runway. They'd had a flood down there. I didn't know what a big white X in the middle of the runway did, and I know now. but you know, and that was probably 87, 88. You think about now, any time, I think if you cough wrong as you're walking across the college campus, you're probably going to find yourself on YouTube.
Right.
So it's much more intense, much more intense than what Jim and I had to deal with. We could still get some, I would say, some measure of privacy, some sense of privacy occasionally from it.
Was there more, an understanding more with the press, what was off the record, what was on the record, Jim Ross Lightfoot, you think?
Say that again. I didn't quite
understand. Did the press behave differently toward candidates, do you think?
Yes. I think there was, and you know, I came out of the journalism field. I spent about 19 years at Yokel KMA radio station over in Shenandoah and so on, and there was always a understanding between the candidates. If I was a reporter, I could go to Dave and ask him to tell me something off the record, and he knew that I would keep it to myself and wouldn't let it go.
Yep.
There was that understanding was there, and I don't think that's there today because everybody seems like it's gotten so doggone cutthroat, and journalism is not the vaunted profession that it used to be because so many people have I can think of a couple of words, but I don't want to use on the radio. they've done to the profession, and they've done it to themselves. You know,
Dave Nagel, you weigh in on that as well, please.
Oh, you know, it's one of the most delightful experiences I had in public life was running the Iowa caucuses in 1984. And you could sit down. I can remember, you know, you'd sit down with a David Brinkley or, John Chancellor, and God, you'd buy each other a drink, and you'd talk, and everything was informal, and it was understood, it was off, and they got to know you, and I think they got more information. It wasn't adversarial at all. But today, of course, the perception of the reporter dictates the question that he or she's going to ask you, and dictates the response, how your response is going to be portrayed. I think that's a sad development in journalism today.
Mm-hmm. I
agree with Dave. One other thing I'd like to throw in real
sure.
quick. Even prior to, before Dave and I were involved in it, if you go back and read your history and talk to some of the old-timers, the reporters went out to dinner at night with the candidates and the officials. They had drinks together. They got to know each other. And that has totally disappeared, I think. And that added a bit of comedy that's not there today. Of course, there was comedy when Dave and I were in the Congress. That's not there today either. I mean,
we
shared with you our story about him calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was. And
what was that about? What was that about?
We were bombing Libya.
No, that was the Avenue of the Saints, Jim.
Yep.
That's when the Bob Rowe was the chairman of the Transportation Committee, tried to give our highway off to Illinois as a favor to the minority chairman who was from Illinois, and of course I had to get some help from on the Republican side to block it, and Jim and Fred Grandy came through like champs. But it happened at the conference. I had to be sitting in the conference committee over to Senate, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning when that thing came up, and I got right on the phone, and these guys responded very well. I don't know if you could do that today.
No, I don't think so. We were Republicans and Democrats, but we were Iowans first.
Jim Ross Lightfoot and Dave Nagel, you both certainly experienced victory in an election as U.S. congressman a number of times, but you've also experienced defeat. Dave Nagel in 1992, you mentioned you were defeated. You ran against and were defeated by a fellow incumbent, Jim Nussle. Also,
yep.
Reapportionment,
mm-hmm.
redistricting going on there to have two incumbents facing each other. Tell us, how do you handle defeat as a candidate?
I think one of the things that people have to understand about politics is that you can do everything right and they're going to throw you out, and you can do everything wrong and they're going to keep you. It is so much of it is beyond your control. It's the temper of the time, and it's redistricting. But there'll be years when you do a very good job and the public will be angry, and there are years when you're not as effective or not as efficient, and the public will just give you a pass on it.
When you had that election in 1992 in which you did not get elected, did it take a while to get over that? Do you kind of sink into yourself after that? Is it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, that's one of the toughest roads you're going to hoe is to lose, because when, you know, these aren't defeats that are done in private. I mean, you know, the whole world knows you lost. And I can remember Jim Nussle's supporters were in the lobby of the hotel where I was staying at 300 of them at 3 o'clock in the morning on their knees praying for my defeat. And so, you know,
that's an image.
Oh no, that's life. You move on. That, you know, but I mean, so no, it takes a while. I mean, but here's the thing, and I was interested in Jim's response. I never had much emotion on election night. Win or lose, I never felt too much. It always took me about 2 or 3 days after the election before it set in for me that the thing was actually over, and that I didn't have to run anymore. I mean, that's what kind of surprised me, was I thought I'd be all fired up and angry and ready to go and everything else, and when the thing is over, it was just like, okay. Yep. It's over. Let's move on.
Jim Ross Lightfoot, in 1998, you ran against the then state senator Tom Vilsack for governor of Iowa, narrowly defeated in that. Did it take you some time to get over that?
Well, I totally agree with one of Dave's comments as far as how it's a delayed reaction. It takes you a day or two for it to soak in. No, that one was probably was relatively easy to get over because I had made up my mind when we got into that race that if we win it, fine, we'll be the governor. If we lose it, fine, it's time to go back to the real world and get a job again. So that decision was made, and I didn't have much angst over that at all.
You were narrowly defeated by Tom Vilsack. Did you know going in, waking up as Dave Nagel knew in 1992, that it wasn't going to go your way, or was it a toss up in your mind?
That was probably one of those that you really didn't have that good of a feel for.
It was a hard one to gauge. That was a hard one to gauge.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on that was different, and it was I didn't have the vaguest idea how it was going to go. And the angst of losing was from, we're all competitive, or we wouldn't be in this kind of stuff.
Right.
And so you like to win. that's why the Hawkeyes beat the heck out of Nebraska every chance they get, I hope. But
you haven't been back recently, have you?
gentlemen, we've got just a couple minutes left. I wanted to ask you about that. We've seen months and months of the candidates. Let's go to the highest rung, the presidential candidates, going to umpteen rallies, thousands of people cheering. I wonder if there's any danger that a candidate lives too much in a bubble, surrounded only by his or her own cheerleaders. And when you see those pictures, I wonder if you might have a hard time of getting a real sense of how things are going, Dave Nagel.
Well, yeah, but congressional candidates don't live in bubbles.
Okay.
I mean, we're right out there on the ground. You'll know. Delight in telling you. So, no, you know. Now, if you're a presidential candidate or even a statewide candidate, Jim, you've had experience statewide. I don't know about that. I think it would be harder to keep on the ground. But when you're running for Congress, I mean, you're driving yourself and you're filling your own gas in the tank.
Okay.
It's pretty easy. Go ahead.
As a statewide candidate, Jim Ross Lightfoot, a little bit harder to keep your feet on the ground to get back and to connect with real life?
Yeah, you've got more balls in the air, and I totally agree with Dave. I think the best office to hold is in the House, because number one, you got to go before your board of directors every 2 years and get rehired or get fired. And I think with you look at the Senate with 6 years, why should we see a commercial for any sitting senator that is entitled reintroducing him to Iowa or Nebraska or whatever state he might be from? I say, why should you have to reintroduce a senator who is there to represent you through those whole 6 years? And I would think at the presidential level, obviously never experienced that, but with everything that's going on around those guys, it's got to be tough to stay in touch with reality. You know, one of the best things I had going for me was we had a store in Shenandoah and one in Atlantic, a retail shop for ladies' stuff. And, I got a report every day what was going on in Iowa when I talked to my wife, because she was right there with real people doing real things, as Dave said.
Overheard conversations that she would pass on then.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And
here you can have, you know.
And those are probably
things they really believe, you know?
Right? And those are probably worth a lot to get as a candidate. Those things back.
Those gilded edge.
we have about a minute left, gentlemen. I wanted to have you reflect on the presidential race this year. Dave Nagel, would you like to jump out there with a bold prediction this election day?
Yeah, I don't know. There are two rules of politics. Rule number one is get hot at the end. I think Romney got hot a week early, and he may have cooled up. But rule number two is when you have an incumbent below 50% in any poll, the incumbent is probably not going to carry that. And so when you have the president up by 49, 47 or so in battleground states, that cuts it. It may be Romney's day. On the other hand, the president did seem to get a boost off the last debate in Sandy. So it, you know, anybody that tells you they know how this one's going to go is either smarter than I am or making it up.
Jim Ross Lightfoot, we have just a few seconds left. Your thoughts, predictions for this election?
I would say that you have a Republican and a Democrat who are totally in agreement with each other. I feel exactly the same way Dave does, and the factors that he mentioned, and it's there's just so many things that play in this election that we haven't seen in others. That it's a toss-up.
Jim Ross Lightfoot, former Republican U.S. Congressman, and Dave Nagel, former Democratic U.S. Congressman, both serving Iowa. Thank you, gentlemen, for your reflections on this Election Day 2012. We appreciate it.
It was fun. Thanks, Jim. Good to hear from you again. Take care.
You bet, Dave. Talk to you in a few
more
years.
Yep, okay. When we have another election, I'll see you.
Another election. There we go. Bye-bye.
All right, gentlemen. River to River, produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Election coverage tonight beginning at 7 o'clock here on Iowa Public Radio.